Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, thank you, Douglas, and welcome to Breaking the Silence. If you can believe it, we are on the last Sunday evening in February 2020, and where has time gone? But I just want to welcome you to the show this evening. We just have a great guest tonight, and we're going to start off with some preliminary things, but then we're just going to turn it right over to Dr. Perelden, and we're just going to be a great evening, and we want to make sure that you get involved. My voice is about shot. So I apologize for being raspy. If you think it sounds good, I appreciate that, but it doesn't feel as good if it sounds good at all. I'm going to be coughing throughout this too, and I want to apologize up front. I just have been sick pretty well all week long. But I tell you what, I've had a wonderful time, and we have some great new friends listening to us tonight from Atlanta. I spent a wonderful conference there in Atlanta and getting to talk to some wonderful people at the Trauma Sensitive School Conference, the world's largest trauma sensitive school conference in the world at Atlanta. And I found some wonderful news. So brace yourself, Houston. In 2022, that entire conference is coming to downtown Houston, Texas, and we will be the host of it hopefully for several years from 2022 on. And it was just great, and I met so many wonderful people, and you're going to be blessed by some of the people that I met. I actually they were so kind. The people that ran the conference have a bookstore, and they offered that if you had a book, bring your book and you can sell it. And I brought every book that I had, and I sold out immediately. And in that, I got to meet Adam Lanningham. And Adam has written a book called Gifted Children and How Trauma Impacts Them. I'm going to have Adam on the program. He was just wonderful. And then also another guy that was running the book table that day was Paul Sears. He wrote a book called Brainwise, and I'm going to have him on the program. I just ran into so many wonderful people in Atlanta, and it was great to be there. And I thank them for their hospitality and for buying all the books and just being the people that they are. And I thoroughly enjoyed that conference and learned a lot of good stuff too. This past yesterday, I was at College Station, and I met some wonderful people. So we have some new listeners tonight from College Station, and I want to let you know right up front, College Station, you hang on to what your vision is for that community and what your vision is to be able to do what you want to do with the trauma and the help that you want to give the women in that town. And it's going to work. It's going to happen. And I appreciate the invite and anything that I can do to come back to help you make that possible. I would love to do that even more so. So it was just wonderful to be with them literally all day yesterday. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. So appreciate doing all that with everybody. In the next few weeks, next week we have Brandon Dempsey. He is coming back to finish up his story on what he started, and he's the worship leader from Austin, Texas. And Brandon has had some wonderful things happen to him and his wife, Heather, in the last week or so, where it just actually shows the writing on the wall. Ta-da, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. This is my purpose, and this is how it's going to happen. And I'm so excited to have Brandon back on next week. So you want to make sure you listen in next week. And I believe, Brandon, if you want to, I welcome you to call in tonight at 888-627-6008 and give us the website of how they can hear my interview with you that's going to be released this Thursday on Brandon's show. So if you want to text that to me, Brandon, or call in and give Doug the information, or we can put you right on the air and tell us about that. But we had a great, I believe it's a video interview that we had, and he's going to release that Thursday on his program. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be great. I got a call yesterday after I was leaving. You know, my voice was shot driving back from College Station, Texas. The phone rang, and I thought, okay, I got to get it because there's a lot of counseling that I do over the phone. So I picked up the phone, and it was Joe Hendershot. And Joe Hendershot and his wife, Darty, run the Reaching the Wounded Student Conference in Columbus, Ohio. And he has books after books after books. It's out. Matter of fact, he has one right now that's just was shipped to his home, and he's opening them up and looking at them. And we're going to try to have Joe Hendershot 2 weeks from tonight on the program. And he gave me the honor of this afternoon after church texting me and saying and inviting me to come and be a presenter at this year's Reaching the Wounded Student Conference, a national conference in Columbus, Ohio, in June, I believe. And that's going to be 2 or 3 days that I'll be there sharing with them, and looking forward to having a new friend in Ohio. So that's just going to be great. You know, I could just keep rambling, but we do have a guest tonight. But before we get to that, I want to share with you because, hey, I got to earn my pay here, so I have to throw you some intelligence, and then we'll let all of the rest of the evening's intelligence come from you folks out there and our guest. But I want to tell you what. If you have teenagers tonight in the house, get them around the radio right now, and I want them to listen to just a few of these tips. A few things that you should leave in your past. Okay, just a few things. We're not going to do too many because I really have a great guest tonight. But leave in the past of letting other people write your life story. It's your story. You could spend your whole life worrying about what other people think of you or what they want from you, but it's not going to get you very far if you don't take charge and design your own life plan. Chances are, you're going to fall into someone else's plan. And guess what they have planned for you? Probably not much. Don't let other people write your life story. Let go of the fear of making mistakes. You know, often I have found this out in my life. I have made so many mistakes, but some of my greatest achievements in life or most beautiful ideas or thoughts have come from after I had made a mistake along the way. Don't consider it a mistake. Consider it a stepping stone to something even greater in your life. Another thing that you need to leave behind: the belief that perfect means the same thing to everyone. Perfect people come around from every corner of this beautiful planet and can be seen everywhere, even in the mirror. Yeah, that's right. Perfect is the way that you are born. Perfect is the way you are now. Don't, be unique. we're just all right the way we are. Polish up what we're doing, but don't think that perfect has you have to be perfect in somebody else's eyes. Be who you genuinely are. Get rid of negative thinking. It's our thoughts that really dictate the way that we feel. So why not choose thoughts that make you feel better, that make you feel important, that make you feel like a masterpiece, that make you feel that you're amazing? I have spent majority of my life looking in the mirror thinking I was worthless. Let's turn that around now. Let all that stuff go to the past. You have a purpose, you have a goal, and you are something special. Now, listen to this one. Huddle up around the radio. Turn it up on your iPhone so you can hear this. Let go of not following your intuition. One day your life will flash before your eyes. Make sure it's worth watching. Stop and think about it. Really think about it. What is it that you really want to do with your life? Forget what you think you should do, but what do you think you should do? Forget about what other people want you to do. Be honest with yourself. Your answers don't need to make an impression on anyone but you. Last one, and then we're going to get to our guest. Get rid of doing something just because other people are. You know, as a parent, you always use the same thing when the kids wanted to go do something that you didn't want them to do. And, well, Johnny's getting to do it. Well, is Johnny going to jump off the bridge, or are you going to follow Johnny? We always throw that out as parents. But let me tell you something. Give yourself permission to immediately walk away from anything that gives you a bad feeling, a bad vibe. I was sitting here watching the Houston KPRC Channel 2 TV. It's on right now in the background here. I can kind of look over my shoulder and see it. They have a special tomorrow night on the news. Coaches and how they've been abusing their players. I haven't seen the news broadcast, but I want to tell you what, parents. If there is something in your gut that's starting to alarm you, and then starting to alert you, never ignore the feeling that is in your gut. That is a God-given alarm clock. I spent a lot of time talking to parents about this College Station yesterday. Give yourself permission to immediately walk away from anything that gives you a bad feeling. There's no need to call your child and try to explain why you want them to come home immediately. If you have a feeling that something may be wrong, you say, get home, son. Get home, daughter. We'll talk about it when you get here. Don't try to make an explanation for it or make sense out of it. Just always trust what you feel. Now, that's just a few things that I wanted to share with you. But as we talk about a different kind of topic tonight than we normally talk about, but an interesting topic and a topic that I think is so relevant today as it has been probably in our country the last 20 years in a powerful way. Dr. David Perodin, there we go, I knew I would finally get it, promotes a safety initiative of taking action before a disaster strikes. Are you hearing this? He's an author, a researcher, a professor, a legal expert witness. He has been on PBS twice. He has an awesome book out called School of Errors, E-R-R-O-S. And he hosts his own program called the Safety Doc Podcast. Dr. David has earned a Doctor of Philosophy degree in Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he researched high-stakes safety decisions in education, healthcare, and military. He delivered two school safety presentations on Wisconsin public television and also wrote and directed a film about school safety with the Pulitzer Prize winner David Obst. Dr. David's worked on being published in a number of journals, and he's frequently interviewed by the media about school safety topics. And his book, School of Errors, Rethinking School Safety in America, is out right now. And he's retired in 2019, and he says here that he would probably like to swap his bicycle for his desk. Well, Dr. David, I tell you what, welcome to the program, and we're going to talk about some of these issues this evening, and I just want to welcome you to Breaking the Silence. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm great, Dr. Williams, and thank you for having me on Breaking the Silence. I love the show, and your introduction resonates. You know, you're talking about following your intuition.
Yes.
Research by Gary Klein in California in the 80s talked about following your research and following your intuition, how important that is. And people are almost always dialed into their intuition. You know, what your intuition is telling you, follow that. So, yeah, you're right on, and the research is right behind that statement.
That's great. That's great. You know, I tell you, Doctor, you live in Wisconsin, correct?
I do, yes.
I do. I'm going to be up there, I believe, in a few months at one of the, it's one of the Crimes Against Children conferences at Wisconsin Dells, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going
20
to be
minutes
up there.
From my house.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we may actually get to meet in person. That would be great.
Yeah, certainly. Look me up. Yeah.
Well, tell me about this book, what you're passionate about, what you love about life,
sure.
What you, you know, at your age, since you get to retire, and I'm kind of envious of that, to be honest with you. But what is it that makes you want to get up in the morning and the purpose of your life right now?
Yeah, I'll tell you, well, first, I have a beautiful family, right? So,
fantastic.
You know, that makes every day extra special. And, you know, I like to do a lot outdoors. So took a 7-mile walk today, went by a couple lakes that are in my community. I like to bike when it's warmer out. You know, we have snow right now and ice, so I can't do that. So making sure that I'm connected with other people and connected with nature. But when, you know, also there are tremendous people in the safety community, and there's a lot of parents who are very nervous about the safety of their kids, whether it be at school or in the community. And I wanted to make sure that I brought clarity to that. So when I wrote School of Errors, it is the most honest book you will ever read about the $3 billion school safety industry. And, I mean, there are many truths which were covered up, you know, by people who had incentives to make money off of selling different fortifications to schools. You know, Dr. Williams, it's actually a $3 billion a year industry to sell these things to school. And they don't make schools safer, right? And they don't get to the core issues of we need to make sure that kids feel connected to school. And we also need to make sure that what we're doing isn't introducing harm, lifelong harm, whether it be physical or psychological harm to students and staff. It's mm-hmm. really, it's almost the Wild West out there. So when I wrote School of Errors, it took a deep dive. I had 10 additional researchers go through to make sure that what I wrote was calibrated to what they were seeing. I worked with the city of New York to get information about 9/11. I took the 9/11 harbor rescue, 500,000 people in 9 hours, and how that worked in the psychology of how people kind of follow when someone takes the lead, and then transfer that over to a school setting. So I've had incredible feedback. School board members, people in different countries have contacted me. The book is in a library in Nigeria. And people are saying, you know, they've said, David, we wanted to have this conversation, but it feels like it's stacked against us, right? People want to have fortifications. They want to have fences and surveillance cameras. But your book allows us to get into this conversation and, you know, that we need to make sure students are aware of how to keep themselves safe, situational awareness, things like that.
Yeah.
So I felt that it's landed really well. And that was my intent. It's just an industry that is very clouded. So get this right now. So, Dr. Williams, we have 400 bills a year in the United States at the state level get proposed for school safety. Like, that's crazy, right? 400 bills. Nobody can keep track of them. And most are for fortifications.
And explain, can you break that down, Doctor? Fortifications. Okay. Break that down to where I understand what you're talking about.
Sure. So fortifications would be things like fences, surveillance cameras, bollards, which are those little stumpy things that go into concrete to stop a vehicle. And there's a range of different barricade devices that can get installed onto doors. And actually, a lot of these things aren't even compliant with building codes or ADA, but, you know, it's all an afterthought. So fortifications, and then also these very hyper-realistic drills and simulations are, just commonplace right now of people pounding on doors, firing off blank rounds, and then the justification is, well, if staff or students don't feel it, you know, if they don't experience this as close as it can be, they won't recognize it and know how to respond in the moment. But, you know, we know that's just not true. We don't do fire drills where we, you know, pump smoke into schools and you know, have pieces of burning debris by the exits and have firemen stomp around in their full turnout gear from classroom to classroom. We don't do tornado drills. So somehow we make this exception, right? And I think I figured out why this happens, and I wrote about it. So from marketing, there's a term called customer perceived value. And customer perceived value basically means that when the perceived value is increased student safety, it's practically unthinkable to assign a price tag to peace of mind. So basically, if somebody tries to sell you something and they say, this might help one time in one circumstance, might. Someone's like, well, I guess we have to do it because, you know, there's a chance, right? So, you know, that gets, that happens a lot. And then there's something called social proof. I teach superintendents. So I teach graduate classes for school superintendents. They talk about this all the time. They say, Dave, the district next to us made the decision to put in the fences and the surveillance cameras and the bulletproof windows. And if we don't do it, it looks like we're incompetent, right? Like we're not following their lead. So we have this peer pressure. And then, you know, they assume that it was vetted. The other district did their research. So why should we do our research? You know, we're just going to go with it. And then there's always this perpetual upgrade. You know, our cameras are 2 years old, but you can get a new camera that, you know, has even higher definition. And all of these things just miss the point, right? They miss the point of we need to make sure that students feel connected to schools, and we need to make sure that we're not scaring and terrifying kids. You know, I can talk about it in a bit, some of these drills, and parents, you know, contacting me afterwards. And kids, Dr. Williams, kids who do not return to school ever after they've participated in these drills because of the effects of drill trauma.
Okay, we're going to dig a lot deeper into that here just shortly. We're going to take our first break now, David, and I appreciate a lot of information you kicked out in a very little bit of time, but I want to go back and kind of take it from what kind of situation. So when we come back after our break, I'm going to ask you up front, what kind of world are we living in since, let's just go back to Columbine. Since Columbine and those kind of things, has it progressively got worse every single year? But I want to know what your perception of it is and what the answer to, and then we're going to dig a little bit more on what you're talking about in your book. Stay with us. Don't you turn the dial right now. We'll be back in a minute and 20 seconds on Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores Amazon, and Books a Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right, welcome back. And we just have an awesome guest, the author of School of Errors. And doctor, with what's going on in our world just in my children's lifetime, how bad of a situation are schools in? Can you just give me your, I mean, you're probably the most intelligent in the nation on this. What does this really look like? Should we really be afraid every day that we let our kids get on that school bus and go to school?
Sure. Well, it's a terrific question. And it's a question shared by, you know, every parent. You know, I'm a parent and my daughters, you know, go to school. So sure. It's something that I need to think about too. If we look objectively at for example, gun violence in schools. Now, yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that we can examine as far as school safety, bullying, harassment, things like that. But if we look at gun violence, we have seen an increase in the frequency of gun violence events since Columbine and a gradual increase of overall number of students killed or injured. But, you know, those are kind of misleading numbers, right? Because if there's a school shooting and, you know, 400 students attend the school, all 400 of those students and staff have been traumatized, right?
So right, sure.
We kind of look at this misleading of, well, you know, one or two people were affected. Well, no, I mean, 400 people and their families and the relatives were affected, so we have this massive,
the whole community,
this massive number. And we don't have plans to deal with that. We don't have debriefing, for one, when we do have incidents, you know. But so that's kind of what the landscape, you know, looks like. And I think it's been amplified by the tendency to do hyper-realistic simulations. Mm. And, you know, what that involved, and actually they did one here in my community in June. They put an ad in the paper, get this. And they said, anybody that wants to participate in the active shooter drill, just let us know at the school, and you can play the role of victim, of responder, of, you know, whatever. And I'm like, this is like trying out for a, you know, like a movie role or something. This is insane, you know, but yet, you know, that's how that was carried out. So what happens, you know, we have these hyper-realistic exercises, and we know that kids have a hard time distinguishing between what's authentic and what's pretend. So it's really, really hard when kids are involved for them to figure out what, you know, which part of this is really a drill, and what isn't a drill. So, but yeah, hyper-realistic drills, there isn't any checks and balances. Anything goes. There isn't what's known as institutional review board process. And that's used at universities to make sure that university research, for example, doesn't get too crazy in one direction and put people at harm. Back right. In 1971, we had the Stanford Prison Experiment, and just, you know, a quick overview of that. Students were assigned either the role of prisoner or guard, and that was studied to see how that relationship would work. And within a few days, it got so violent they had to discontinue it. Well, actually, shortly after that, in 1974, they put together this IRB model, and all research at universities needs to be approved by this committee, making sure that human subjects aren't at harm. And looking at this, I'm saying, my goodness, like this would make sense to apply at a K-12 school setting for all of our safety drills to make sure that we don't right off the bat start with these way over the top drills that really don't teach kids or staff anything. They just traumatize them. They come out of this with you know, fear, not wanting to go back to school. I'll share a story. Do you have time?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So I was contacted by two parents in Pennsylvania, and they said, our kids got up this morning, Dave, and we were ready to get them on the bus, and they absolutely refused to get on the bus. They were punching us. They were kicking, and we couldn't figure out what's wrong. They were screaming, and they dug into it a little bit, and they found out the day before there was a hyper-realistic drill at their elementary school. And so they contacted the school. They worked with the kids. They took the kids to counseling. They tried to assure them. They could not even get their kids close to the school without their kids becoming extremely dysregulated in the vehicle where they'd have to turn around. They tried to enroll them in a different school this fall. That wasn't successful because, again, the response of anxiety. And now they're online educating, and, you know, both of the parents have talked to me and said, Dave, we wish we had a better outcome, but how do we work with this trauma? I'm not a therapist. You know, I'm just an ear at that point to listen to them. But there are so many people, Dr. Williams, like them. There are so many people listening to us right now who are thinking, you know what? Yeah, my kids have been subjected to some pretty graphic and unnecessary, you know, drills and discussions about school safety.
How prevalent is these hypersensitive or hyper-realistic drills in this? How often do these happen? And is it happening in a lot of schools?
It is. I would say it's the majority of schools, and it is definitely picking up momentum.
You know, if I was coming back from a plane from Atlanta, and let's just say about halfway between Atlanta and Houston, the stewardess comes out and says, folks, and the oxygen masks fall down, and put the oxygen mask on, and we start going through that a drill of that, I don't know if I'd ever get on a plane again. And then her finally go, oh, just a test. That wouldn't be any common sense at all, but we're doing that to our kids.
Right. Wow. Hey, that is a perfect example. That is a perfect example. Right, at face value, you know, you're telling that, you know, people listening to this are like, yeah, that wouldn't make any sense. I'm taking the family to Orlando in a few weeks. I'm hoping we don't have anything like that mid-flight, because that would really put a damper on the rest of the vacation. But hey, so we had some movement though. In the last 2 weeks, the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, so the two biggest teachers unions, and also Everytown for Gun Safety, which researches gun violence in schools, they came out with a joint recommendation in a paper, and they said, hey, we need to tone down our active shooter drills. We no longer need and want unannounced drills or drills that simulate gun violence. So this is big, because beforehand, there wasn't a statement out there. I wrote about it extensively in School of Airs, but we didn't have a national kind of organizations coalescing together to oppose this, because you don't want to be the one district that opposes it or the one organization, because the vendors, you know, they see the money in the water. They see the $3 billion. It's easy to be discredited for your positions in this because, again, the customer perceived value. That's the reason in my community we have a lot of these things out in front of our schools, and the parents can see that really don't make us safer.
Mm-hmm. What about some of the things that is happening? I think I remember seeing something on this on the news not too long ago. Schools spending millions of dollars on safe rooms and those kind of devices. Is there anything coming out right now that you would you be a spokesman for anything right now of school safety, of what's being marketed out there in this billion-dollar industry?
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting you ask, because I'm frequently asked to be a spokesperson for, you know, different devices. And, you know, I obviously can't identify any of those, but, you know, some are, I think, are really outlandish, and some just don't have the research behind them. But, you know, so one I talked about on PBS was bulletproof igloos. So you can get this concept of an igloo made out of a bulletproof material sold last year to school districts in Oklahoma. So they would they would put these things in their classroom, and then the thought was you'd have an announcement over the PA, and, of course, you know, intruder, you'd run into the igloo. Completely doesn't have a practical aspect to it, right? And yet these things take up a third of the classroom, and, you know, they not only look out of place, but this was just crazy marketing. And you don't have to test these. Nothing has an underwriter's laboratory. And Dr. Williams, right now, five states have enacted laws to allow classrooms to be exempt from building codes and ADA, meaning you can put anything on your doors for barricades, any type of locks. This happened in my state. And I put together an 8-minute testimony against this, because students with disabilities, for example, it would be ridiculous and dangerous to expect them to pull down a handle and press a button for 3 seconds in order to get out of a classroom, right? That would be crazy. Or imagine preschoolers, if you have that type of, you know, setup in place. These things have just gone so far to the right. And then, you know, we talk about students with disabilities. I was a former special education director. 15% of our students across the nation, 55 million students total, have disabilities. What's happening right now, and this is terrifying, and parents need to really listen to this part, because schools are exempting students with disabilities from safety drills. It's a process which is against the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, but they're saying, hey, when we run these drills, they become so graphic, they become so hyper-realistic that students with autism, they can't handle them. They become dysregulated. We have a hard time, you know, getting them out of the building or into their safe area. So, you know, they're just going to stay home that day, or they're going to be in a different part of the building where we don't conduct a drill. And that's insane for two reasons. One is it's not ethical, right? Why should some students receive appropriate safety instruction and others don't? I mean, it's an act of discrimination. It's completely inappropriate. And the other part is, if your drills are that intense, there's something wrong with your drills. You know, we need to look at different ways that we educate, because if we have students with autism who are becoming dysregulated, maybe we have students who are preschoolers and first graders. I'm sure we do, right, who are becoming dysregulated by these types of drills. So it's not exempting people. That's not the answer. I wrote an article. It was in Kappen, Phi Delta Kappen. Many people had commented, you know, got a hold of me and said, yeah, this is happening. You know, we've been asked by our schools, you know, keep your child home on this day. And again, when I first brought this up, Dr. Williams, people were like, no, that's not a widespread practice. And suddenly the emails start pouring in from different states and different countries, and people calling me and say, yeah, this is happening. And I knew it wasn't right, but I didn't know how to approach my school. So it's absolutely terrifying. I also instruct aspiring special education directors. And to this day, I had a class just finished, and 4 students showed me their forms that their district had where they exempt students. And I said, these are illegal. This process needs to end immediately. You need to become informed, right? You need to choose a more ethical approach to involving all of your students and parents in safety.
Yeah. What, how traumatic are these drills that they're trying to make as realistic as possible? I know Sue Ford White, I called her this week when I told her, I guess it was late last week when I knew you was going to be the guest on the show, and she believes in what you're saying. And they try to handle legislatively to not do this. That this is more trauma on what a child should ever have to endure at school, just the pretend session of this, the practice drills on this. You said you had a story on this from like McGill University. About the trauma. What kind of trauma does this do to the child?
Right. So Dr. Gustavo Turecki is the chair of psychiatry at McGill University, and really regarded as one of the world's best in studying early life trauma. Dr. Paul Rapp, head of military medicine, has also done work in early life trauma, two more though, you know, for people maybe age 18 to 20. But so they're looking at early life trauma. They haven't looked specifically at safety drills. So I want to make that point clear. Like we're having this discussion. There isn't research that, you know, needs to inform this discussion. You know, that will happen. But what he has found is that, you know, kids who are exposed to life trauma at you know, young age, it basically alters the brain, right? They can objectively identify it through brain scans, the pituitary, adrenaline areas, the amygdala. And basically what he had said is, you know, the amygdala never forgets. Once you're subjected to a traumatic event as a child, you have that with you. There's some, absolutely, you know, triggers that will bring it back. And I'm thinking about this at school. And again, I want to make it clear that I'm not citing a study that's been done on school intruder drills. And partly is, you know, the reason, if you ever put that before a research board, we talked about IRB earlier, they'd look at that and say, that's ridiculous. We're not going to traumatize kids for you to find this out. So you have to kind of find it out in other ways. But yeah, so imagine these kids, you know, in the future, if there's sirens going, you know, past their house, fire trucks or 4th of July or whatever it is, or, you know, doors slamming, who knows? But it is very likely, you know, from what the research is starting to, you know, show, that we could have a brain imprint, which is very difficult to erase, especially because we don't debrief people after these types of drills or traumatic events in general. I do that. I'm a county debriefer. I work with our county emergency responders after they've responded to a drowning, a fatal event, something like that, and walking them through immediately afterwards. But we don't do that in schools, and that's also contributes, you know, to this. We just think everything's fine, right? The drill's done. People are you know, back to their lessons, and we have no idea of the damage that's been done.
And isn't debriefing as important as the actual drill?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a process to learn how to debrief. And it's also called a hot wash. There's two different terms for it.
Right.
When I was taught to be a debriefer, it was a 4-day training. And, you know, I was with FBI, you know, law enforcement, emergency responders. And yeah, it's a very thorough training. And debriefing, you know, for the people listening, debriefing isn't just rehearsing the event. You know, debriefing is to ask the participants, you know, how are you feeling right now? Explain to me how you feel. What are you going to do tonight? What is something you can do differently tonight than you've done other nights? Maybe, you know, take a walk or listen to some different music, or you're trying to figure out where they're at. And as I say, and I've learned this, you know, I think from some of the best, it's you're building a bridge with them, but you don't know where you're going to. You're just taking them from where they're at, which is a very traumatized, compromised psychological position, and you're helping to move them in a better place. And yeah. To me, I mean, that's wonderful work. It's volunteer work that I do, but it is absent from the school setting. And I think of the people I'm working with, you know, grizzled firefighters and police officers and EMS who break down in tears, tremendous people. And I struggle to hold it together myself. And I'm thinking, what are our kids doing? What are 7-year-olds doing? How about a 10-year-old with autism? You know, what about a 13-year-old? I mean, I couldn't imagine how they're processing and having to internalize, you know, some of these things that we're subjecting them to. We're willingly subjecting them to as adults. It's insane.
It is. And, you know, the only thing I'm sitting here thinking of my high school days, because I know in grade school we only had the fire drills in Illinois, Southern Illinois, and, you know, we always got underneath the desk or in the hallway with our heads between our leg, our knees, and things of that order. But I do remember in high school, now that you're starting to talk about this hyper-realistic, that around prom time, they would have a car crashed on the lot and kids laying outside of the car bleeding and the ambulance coming up and trying to give the indication and that hard lesson of don't drink and drive at prom, that type of thing. And I remember there was always girls off to the side just crying their eyes out, and people have to go over and say, hey, wait, this is all an act.
Right.
This isn't real. And I guess that's a lower level of what you're talking about now. But this is fascinating. Tell you what, we're going to take our last break. And then when we come back on the other side of this break, Doctor, I want to find out, so what's your solution? So we're going to dig a little deeper on the other side of this break. And stay with us as we have our last segment here for Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and our guest tonight, Dr. Perlden from Wisconsin, the author of School of Errors, and he's just been giving us all kinds of awesome information. And I would love if there's anybody, we have a lot of teachers, and I know parents that listen to the show. I would love to have, you know, call in and ask Dr. a question at 888-627-6008, and we'll try to throw you in as fast as we can. I know we're on the last segment here, but we can probably squeeze you in. We would love to hear what your thoughts and your comments and questions are. Doctor, do you in your research and knowledge on this, does, if I'm a parent and I'm listening to the show tonight, do I get advance notice that this is going to happen tomorrow with my child at school?
Right. So that's site-specific. We don't have any federal laws for school safety. Now, Greg, you're thinking that's crazy, right? But we don't.
It is crazy.
Federal laws, and it's left up to the states, and states usually hand it down to the local level. So there's no inter-agency liability from school to school on this. Every school does it different. So the answer is maybe. And that's not a good answer, right? That's
not answer. So if you're a parent listening, what do you recommend they do? Contact the school and find out, hey, are you doing these kind of things?
Yeah, well, definitely. A parent, you know, be involved. And there's a few things right off the bat. And I wrote an article about it for Phi Delta Kappa, and it's going to be coming out soon. But, again, we can – the power of schools is we can make decisions at a local level, at a school level, and we can say – hey, every time we do a drill, we're going to have a committee review it to make sure that we believe it is safe for our staff and our students. Greg, you'd be surprised at the number of staff who contact me and say, I was just shot up with a pellet gun today during a training, and I don't think this is right. And like, I have distrust with my employer. And so anyway, there's this thing we talked about, right? A committee. But if a school had a policy that said, all of our drills will be reviewed by a committee, which has a principal, teacher, counselor, board member, students, we have the student voice, parent, police officer, municipal emergency manager, and community member. So we have this committee. And also then people are made aware ahead of time we're going to have a drill. And also, again, the committee is making sure they're going through this, that our drills are not going to introduce physical or cognitive harm to people. We're going to mitigate that as best we can. And the other part is asking, what's the learning objective? What are you trying to learn from these drills? I ask that all the time, and I don't get answers. Are you trying to learn how your two-way radios work, how teachers communicate with each other? Are you trying to figure out how emergency responders can successfully engage with younger students? That's a great goal, a learning objective. But, you know, we don't have that. And also, there are many things we can do which are free, which improve student safety, like situational awareness. If we took students for 15 minutes around the campus, and we had a few things set up ahead of time, a unicorn on a flagpole, jingle bells playing, the scent of oranges, and we had students identify what was out there. First time we bring them back, Greg, they'll be like, I don't know, it was just, we're outside for a while. It was sunny and it was windy. And then the second you take them through and you point these things out, if you do that more and more, kids pick up on all kinds of stuff. They tune into their environment, situational awareness. And that's the kind of safety we want anywhere, whether we're, you know, out in the woods, you know, at a shopping mall, in a school. So there's a lot of things we can do to practice situational awareness. Don't cost a dime. But yeah, for parents, you know, asking how does the school conduct drills? Why do you conduct drills this way? What are you trying to learn? And then also, how do you account for any trauma that my child, you know, might receive from this training? And here's a big thing. If right away, parents, if you are ever presented with a waiver form so your child can participate in a drill, that is a dangerous drill. Do not allow your child to participate in it. Demand answers from the district. That absolutely has no place in school safety.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Is there any other recommendation that you have for the parents listening tonight that would be?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. There's a wonderful website. It's from the Office of Safe and Supportive Schools from the U.S. Department of Ed, rems.ed.gov. And it is REMS. Tremendous. I recommend it all the time. They actually will come on site, Greg, for free and train staff and students on school safety. There's a whole version where they just work with kids, like how to use a fire extinguisher. What if you were involved in a vehicle accident? How would you support yourself and others who might be involved in that? And, you know, being trauma sensitive, right? We don't need to introduce trauma. We shouldn't. We should fight any opportunities to get, you know, where trauma is introduced to our schools. School connectedness, the Centers for Disease Control has done a tremendous amount of work.
Yes.
But we want students to feel connected. We want them to feel safe. A lot of the stuff that's happening today in this $3 billion industry has no place in our schools, no place in our community. And people are realizing that. They're coming together. And through your work, you know, having me on and Robin Kogan a few weeks ago, you're connecting people and they're saying, we feel the same way. Let's change it. We can improve. We can be better than this. We become informed and we'll increase school safety.
Give me that website again because I want to make sure we have that out there. REMS?
Sure. Yep. REMS.ED.GOV.
.ED.GOV.
They actually take best practices from districts all around the country, send them, and they share those out. They have it's called a toolbox. It's awesome. And they're really, they do it the right way, Greg. They do it the right way. They're not trying to sell you, you know, all these things you don't need or these dangerous drills.
You know, I'm always interested. A lot of times we throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to politics and governments and things of that order with what's going on the headlines and everything. But I want to tell you what, the .gov websites are some of the best out there. And CDC has probably one of the best. I'm on that almost all the time about trauma sensitive, about ACEs, about so many things that we talk about and have guests talk about on the show. Majority of the stuff is all free of charge. I mean, our taxes have paid for this, but there's just loads of information that just pours out if you would just dig into it and learn more about it.
And when I instruct aspiring school leaders, when I introduce this to them, it's the first time they've ever heard about it. So, right, we need to get the word out there and make people aware of these wonderful resources, that our tax dollars have paid for. They're very competent, extremely vested people on the other side of this. So there's a lot of goodness out there. But, again, I think it's become so fragmented. We have 400 bills a year in school safety. People are just kind of whirling around trying to make sense of this. They're being told a lot of things that just are not accurate. And that's one of the reasons I wrote School of Airs, is to bring clarity again, the most honest book about the $3 billion school safety industry.
Do you think we've been manipulated in the system? Because if you don't, you know, we as a society, as parents in schools, that's run by school boards I used to be on a school board and I love that kind of involvement. But if a company comes in front of you and say, if you really love your kids, you're going to put this in your building, how can you say no? You know what I mean? It puts you in a position to where they kind of have you between a rock and a hard spot. Of course we want to protect our kids, but a bulletproof igloo it may not be the way I want to protect my child.
Right.
And I think they're using – our lack of answers to give us some answers that are filling a lot of people's pockets with a lot of cash, that's not the best response to this. What would you say if you could say, if the President of the United States calls you, no matter what political party, and just says, hey, doctor, I'm putting you in charge. What would be the first thing that you would do and mandate that every school have in their building right now?
Sure. First, I would accept that. Absolutely. the first thing I would do is that we put IRB, Institutional Review Board, a review committee for all of our safety drills. The second is that we make funding available to make sure that all of our communication systems, PAs and two-way radios, are functioning in all of our schools. Believe it or not, Greg, easily 50% of the schools, including brand new construction, the PA systems can't be heard all throughout the school. Those are two things that we need to do immediately. And then the third is that we need to pass, in 2015 we had a chance, there were two mental health bills at a national level in the House and Senate. They got voted down. We need to reintroduce that legislation, pass it this time, so we have a framework at a federal level so all 50 states have equitable mental health services for students, and that has a funding model with dollars attached to it. Those would be the three things right off the bat. Get on the phone with the president when you're done here. I'm ready to take the call tonight. I'm up for the job first thing in the morning.
Well, all three of those suggestions and actions that you would take are perfect. I tell you what, if any of our listeners tonight wants to get a hold of you personally, Doctor, what would be the best way to find out more about you, or to just send you an email or a note of encouragement or even a question? How would they do that?
Sure. Visit my website, which is safetyphd.com. Again, safetyphd.com. There's a little bit about me, and my email address is on there, you know, some of my publications. And people reach out to me all the time. And actually, a man who runs a cave rescue group, people who go down in caves, sent me a book, and I got it this week. He had been listening to some of my podcast, and he said, here's a book, and it talks about case studies of how people have been rescued in caves, and I thought you'd find this interesting. And I did. It was amazing. So I always look forward when people have questions, any thoughts. If I can be informed that there's something I don't know, that they're like, Dave, here, check this out. I definitely want to connect with anyone that has an interest in this. And I know a lot of people have an interest in this.
And they can get in contact with you through your website, correct? Through that website, safetyphd.com?
Yeah, safetyphd.com. My email address is available on the website, and there's also a little form they can fill out. But and I will respond. I respond to everybody that contacts me.
And the best way to get a hold of this book, School of Errors, how would that be?
Best way, go on to Amazon.com, and you can also go to Barnes & Noble. It has 24 reviews, and thankfully, and gratefully, they've all been 5 stars. And people have written some incredible reviews on the book, you know, from parents to professionals to in the field. So, and it is a hardcover book. It was published by Roman and Littlefield. It has a complete index. Again, it's an incredible read. It has many stories in it. So it's going to be a very vibrant text or book. You know, it's 204 pages, so you'll get through it in a couple nights. Mm-hmm. But it's the book people take with them when they want to have these discussions with their school board. You talked about it. Parents will say, Dave, I got your book, and I got a copy for my superintendent, and I brought it in.
Oh, great idea.
Tell me more about how this happened. So the book is facilitating that.
Fantastic. If there's any schools out there, principals, superintendents that's listening, because I know we have them, and you want to get in touch with Dr. David to come and present at your place, at your school, in front of your board, in front of the community, I'm sure he would entertain that with you most definitely. David, it's been an honor to have you with us tonight. Thank you so much.
Greg, thank you. And again, thank you for your incredible body of work. I'm a huge fan. And just you're making the world a better place. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate what you're doing. You know, we take for granted that things that are happening with our children, when we drop them off, are the right decisions. And sometimes they're good intentions, but it does more damage than good. And I appreciate you presenting and putting the light on this tonight. I really do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, David, thank you. And I tell you what, before we go tonight, I always say the same thing every week, although probably a little different version of it. No matter what you're going through, no matter what's going on in your world and your life and your day and what you're going to have to face next week, I just want to let you know from the bottom of my heart, if you need anybody to talk to, give me a call. You can call me right on my cell phone at 832-396-6525, and I'll answer. And I'll talk and listen to you if you just want to share what's on your mind and your heart. But I always want to let you know before we go each evening, there's hope. There's always, always hope. Join us right here next week. We're going to have Brandon Dempsey. You will not want to miss the second part of this program. It's going to be live next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1, for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.